This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 95, where AC and CJ talk to BS about Azure Premium Storage.
We're going to talk
live September 9, 2015.
You got to do that again. We're going to talk about BS. Nice. That's the whole first part of every show.
This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 95, where AC and CJ talk to BS about Azure Premium Storage, recorded live September 9th, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, AC. How you doing, mate? Stop laughing your head off.
Good morning. I love the intro, man. That's great. AC and CJ talk to BS.
Yeah, so the question is, who is BS? I think this is the million-dollar question, right? We will get to that later in the show.
Yes, we will. Yeah. Unless somebody read the title of the show, which they probably already know who it is.
Wow, we think we're being so sneaky, but not really.
They'll never notice.
Yeah, exactly. So what you doing?
Recording a podcast.
In general.
So not a whole lot. Actually, been having fun living in the open source world this last week. I've been doing a lot of updates with JavaScript code styles and customizing Visual Studio Code to, I can do a key combo and it's going to reformat all my code with the way that my JSCS rules have been set up. So that kind of coding stuff is fun. And then I'm actually starting to spend a bunch of time on putting together a repository for the Angular Directive package that will be a redistributable package for the Office UI Fabric coming up pretty soon. So the Office UI Fabric, you get Microsoft released it, what, like 2 weeks ago, and they don't have directives to it. It's just HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And they don't have plans to do a directive, an Angular package as directives. And so talking to some of the project owners, I was like, are you guys going to do it? And they said, no, we'd love the community to do it, wink, wink. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll create a project. So I'm doing that and doing something else to go along with it, getting it set up in a point where I'll essentially just be the project steward, but I'm going to look for community contributions to get it all together and all that. So I'm just trying to get all the structure around it set up. So that's the thing I've been working on recently. But dude, I'm kind of excited for something that shows up at my house tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got a 120-gallon fish tank in my office. And due to a miss event a couple months ago, I lost a lot of my fish. And so I'm down to about 16, 17 fish in the tank right now.
Ooh, I see. You had an unfortunate accident with the tank.
I can blame my wife on it too. So, and the kids.
Oh, nice. Nice. She doesn't listen to this. Go to town.
No, exactly. Yeah. So I was out of town. One of the fish died. It was one of the bigger fish. When fish die, and just like all food and decay matter and all that stuff, it generates ammonia. Ammonia is toxic to everything. And so I came home and they had, because the kids were upstairs playing with some friends when I was gone, she shut the office doors. Well, she left them shut the entire time I was out of town. So once the fish died, it started to stink up the office. The tank got really toxic. It killed over 50% of the fish in the tank. I got home the following Sunday, opened up the office. It smelled stank and I lost like most of the fish. So
I shouldn't laugh, but that sounds terrible.
No. So tomorrow I have a box of fish, of 33 fish showing up from Utah via FedEx by 10 a.m. So I'm looking forward to restocking the tank tomorrow.
Fish delivery. I like it. It's pretty sweet.
Live,
very handy.
Live fish delivery. So I'm looking forward to it. How about you, man? What are you up to?
I'm working away from home this week, getting started on a new gig. So lots of admin, everything from like ordering networking gear to furniture to you name it, like lots of admin type tasks.
So you're officially no longer an employee of Microsoft.
Correct. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Yep. Congratulations, dude.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. There's lots to do.
Can I give you a list of, if you're doing like office related stuff, can I give you a list of some stuff too?
I'm totally going to call you when I need a hand.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'll be right there. Just call the number. It's, I think, or just email me. It's brickwall@andrewcarl.com. I'll be right there.
Yeah, there you go. I'll be postmaster, right? Yeah.
There you go.
It's that inbox to nowhere.
Yeah.
Hey, so today we've got a pretty interesting show. We've got BS, right? So BS is a cryptic. So we've got AC, CJ, and we've got BS. And if anybody's wondering who BS is Ben Stejink, who's currently an independent SharePoint consultant living in Jacksonville, Florida.
Woo!
Near to you, AC.
Mm-hmm.
And as a system administrator, first introduced SharePoint 2003. Gosh, that goes a wee way back.
I just got a shiver.
Yeah. And since his introduction, he has worked in the SharePoint space for several companies, always focusing on installation, configuration, and administration of SharePoint. In December of 2012, he left the company he was working for to start his own company, IntelliJink. Is that right?
That's right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Since starring in IntelliJink, Ben has had the privilege of working all over the country for professional sports organizations, government organizations, and organizations ranging in size from as few as 25 employees up to organizations of several thousand with offices spread around the globe. Over the last few years, he's followed the Microsoft shift and started shifting his own focus towards Office 365 administration in Azure. It started with simply running SharePoint VMs on Azure and has grown into really digging into the Azure stack and what it has to offer.
All right.
So, Ben Stejink, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
I think we may have talked about you a couple of times on the show already. I don't remember what the episode numbers were, but we came across some research that you'd done, or a couple of times, in fact, but I guess we'll get into that as we get through this. A couple of reports that you've done on storage in Azure and things like that.
Yeah, I know. I listened to an episode here and there. Well, I listened to all the episodes.
That was honesty.
That's cover up.
But yeah, every once in a while I hear AC bring something up. I'm like, oh, look at that. AC found another one of my blog posts, or... It's kind of fun. I kind of feel famous.
Yeah, there you go.
I like the recent blog post, too, about showing how to use Raspberry Pi and LEDs and Node.js to show the status of Azure VMs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Was that inspired by the big flashing DevOps thing that we covered?
I'm trying to remember if I listened to that one. I may be a couple episodes behind.
It was a while ago, but yeah, that was one where a guy had wired up a Raspberry Pi up to some lights to show you the status of your build pipeline.
Hmm.
And then I see one about the Azure VMs, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good use. Nice.
You see, our friend Liam Cleary is he's putting together like 5 or 10 or 15 different Raspberry Pis to do a cluster. He's trying to decide, like, what should I do with it? I'm like, oh, man, you got to go with SETI, right?
Oh, yeah, you got to find aliens for sure. Either that or DevOps, but yeah.
Very cool.
Speaking of doing good for the world. Hey, so tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to. I think for folks that listen to the show, they would have heard us talk about your report a little while back. But give us a quick sort of overview in your words about what you're up to these days.
So I'm still doing a lot of SharePoint stuff. I would say SharePoint is still my main source of income, but starting to do more with Azure, like you said, especially the storage, being a SharePoint guy, being an independent guy, I don't have room for racks and racks of servers in my office, especially being in Jacksonville. It's just too hot to put almost any computer in your office. So really started looking at Azure because I was like, you know what? I can get a nice small laptop, leave it in my office, put all my VMs, all my servers up in Azure, and kind of avoid having any big desktop or any big server here in the office. So that's kind of where it all started. And obviously SharePoint can be very disk intensive, especially when you start dealing with SQL, search, that type of stuff. So the premium storage kind of came out of that. I was like, all right, what do I have to do to make these SharePoint servers really hum in Azure?
Interesting. Yeah, because we know it doesn't like poor performance, right? Especially on its disks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where this all originated. So it started with a blog post of, hey, this is how you run SharePoint on Azure. And it's turned into like a series of 4 or 5 blog posts on, hey, here's storage in Azure.
Yeah, gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah, because I think we, when we read about it, we saw your testing and things like that. So for those of you who aren't familiar, give us a quick rundown on what, you know, what you tested and kind of some of the things you found.
So what I really was testing was a lot of the throughput, the disk bandwidth of how much data can I actually cram through these disks, as well as the IOPS, because those tend to be the big two drivers for your disk performance, especially in SharePoint when you're throwing files in and out of that SQL database. And I found, what I started finding was some really interesting things, particularly around throughput. And since I found that Microsoft has actually done a fair bit of documentation around it, but I started formatting all my disks in 64K blocks, because a lot of SharePoint disk, when it writes, you can get much better performance if your drive's all formatted in 64K blocks instead of the default, I think it's 8 or 4K.
Okay, yeah, something like that, yeah.
So then I started running the tests, testing it as 64K blocks. I used a program called Disk Speed. Microsoft mm-hmm. released it, I don't know how long ago. But you can test and say, hey, I'm going to run it in 64K blocks. What I started finding is I was actually hitting the limit. I was hitting some limit that I didn't know what it was. I couldn't get any more throughput on my disk, but I wasn't hitting the maximum IOPS that Microsoft said you could get. And that was even with standard storage. Premium storage, the same stuff actually applies. They've increased it, especially now with the release of the GS machines and the premium storage on those, which...
the Godzilla.
Yeah, nice. It's pretty sweet. I saw the blog post by them come out like a week ago, and I was like, oh, crap, I got to do this podcast in a week. And Microsoft just went and changed everything on me.
How did they do?
So they actually did really well. And I was surprised at some of what I found. So first of all, with premium storage, that differs from standard storage is you have three different disk sizes. They have their P10, the P20, and the P30 disks. And all of these disks have different performance metrics on the disks, as opposed to standard storage, where you just spin up a disk, you pick the size, and the performance is what you get. So like the P10s, they're 128 gig disks, 500 IOPS per disk, and your throughput is 100 megabytes. The P20s, you have 512 gigabytes of space, 2300 IOPS, and 150 megabytes per second. And then the P30s are the big ones, a terabyte of storage, 500 IOPS, and 200 megabytes of throughput per disk. One thing I am not too fond of premium storage is if I just want a little bit of fast disk, I can't get it. If I want that 5,000 IOPS and 200 megabytes of throughput, I have to do a 1 terabyte disk. So when I'm, especially with SharePoint, if I just want to spin up a small SharePoint farm, do a little testing, I'm not going to throw a bunch of data in there, but I want it to be nice and snappy.
1 terabyte, baby.
Yeah, exactly. and if you want even more than that, you have to start striping it. So you get these big servers and you want to stripe your premium storage. Before you know it, you have like 8 1-terabyte drives striped. So you have 8 terabytes of storage just so you can get, for instance, 40,000 IOPS and whatever limit you start hitting with the throughput of the server. So that's the other thing that I found is all of these servers, it can get really confusing because you have the IOPS and you have your throughput per disk, but then the servers also have their own limits.
Yeah, gotcha.
So these are like the different, when you're talking about the different virtual machines, like the different types and the size and limitations and stuff. So like between the DS, the GS, is that what you're saying? Between those different kinds of VMs and stuff? Or
right. So like, for example, I will use, I'm looking for all my numbers here because there is no way I can ever remember all of these numbers.
Yeah, that's complicated.
And you have, before you do this, you have all this in a blog post too, right? Where you've explained it all, right?
I need to put one together for premium storage. My goal is to actually have that done by the time this podcast actually gets published. I'm like, I'm going to talk about all this stuff and I have no blog post yet on the premium storage and a lot of these numbers I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So my goal is to get one done here in the next few days. So I don't know when this one's actually going to get published, but
this afternoon.
Hopefully, hopefully there will be a blog post out by then.
We're trying to compete with an Apple live streaming event. So usually we are going to have a pretty good chance of beating them out on this live streaming event that's happening today with the new iPhone and the Mac, the extra big iPad. No, seriously though, this, we record this and this will, by the time people hear this, I think it'll be Tuesday. We publish this on Tuesday, September the 15th. So it's a good solid week or so. And I mean, we'll definitely include a link to this too in the show notes. So for those of you who are listening to it, we'll definitely have a link to Ben's post as well as some of the other posts that he's done on his blog about this. But I mean, go ahead and talk about some of the numbers too, And, you know, knowing that you're going to have a post too that you can refer to some of the details and stuff like that, you know, you can, if you want to spare some of the numbers, feel free to do that too. It's up to you.
So yeah, for instance, I'll just do one. I mean, I could spend all day on them because there's like 8 different premium storage machines. But like the DS1, for example, has a max disk IOPS and bandwidth for the entire DS1 VM in Azure of 32 megabytes per second and 3200 IOPS.
Okay.
You compare that to something like the P30 disk, where the P30 disk can actually achieve 200 megabytes a second of throughput and 5000 IOPS. Even though the P30 is capable of that, you'll never actually see that performance on a DS1 because you hit that DS1 limit before you hit your disk limit.
So the lower threshold between the disk and the VM, that's what's going to be your bottleneck. It's, even though if the disk can support something that fast, if the VM can't support it, then that's where you're going to get chopped off at the knees.
Exactly.
So how does that compare to like to a server that you would have, like, you know, that you would say that you'd have on-prem? Like if you're looking at like a standard machine that you'd have on-prem as like a SharePoint web front end, how does the IOPS that you would have locally versus what you would have like working with these different VMs, is that to kind of do like an apples to apples? I've always had a challenge where I'm looking at the different things on what we have like Azure VMs, and it was like, well, you have this many IOPS or this many IOPS. And I'm like, well, God, I've never really paid attention to it on-prem because I've never really had that be a bottleneck.
I mean, it's going to vary drastically based on what you're running on.
It sounds like the classic SharePoint answer of, it depends. Ding.
So yeah, I mean, it can depend on SAN. It can depend on the disks that you have on-prem. It can depend on that connection between your SAN and your VM host. There's so many variables that go into it that it's really hard to say, this is kind of a standard benchmark for what you're going to get on-prem. I had one client I was working with, and we noticed their SharePoint environment was just going dog slow. Hmm. We went in and looked, and they were only getting like they were only getting like 3 megabytes per second of throughput.
Ooh.
So it was terrible. So we went through, tweaked a bunch of stuff. They had SAN guys in and their VMware guys in and all of those guys trying to figure out, okay, where are we hitting this slowdown in our on-prem environment? Just for a comparison, I did go in and run the same speed test on a Windows 7 VM running on my MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was doing a 64K block test on my VM running on my MacBook Pro, I was actually getting almost 23,000 IOPS and a throughput of almost 1,500 megabytes per second.
So when you were running a Windows 7 VM on a MacBook Pro, so 16 gigs of RAM is the host.
16 gigs of RAM. Yeah, I can't remember what it's the same one you have. I can't remember what the product. I think it's an i7.
Yeah.
Quad core.
But you said you were getting 23,000 IOPS. Is that what you said? And 15,000 megabits per second.
Or 1,500.
1,500 megabits per second. So when you say for the different disk sizes that we have in premium storage in Azure, there are different sizes of like a P10, P20, and P30, correct?
Yep.
And those different numbers, they vary in terms of the speed of the number of IOPS that they can support. And that's not the size of the disk. That's the number of IOPS. Is that correct?
So there's the size of the disk, the IOPS, and the throughput all vary from P10 to P20 to P30.
Okay, I see. All right, so the difference, so it's just each one from P10, you go up to P20 to a P30, everything kind of gets ramped up. So if we're looking at like the high end of like a P30, how does that compare on the number, what does that compare on the number of IOPS and the throughput?
I spun up a GS5, which is the monster of all monsters.
CJ and I are raising the roof and you put a G5. Man, the G5, there's nothing, I don't think you can ever say G5 and it implies something bad. From premium storage all the way out to just the Mac Daddy flights.
Exactly. So the GS5 has 32 cores. It has 448 gigs of memory. Will support up to 80,000 IOPS and 2,000 megabytes per second of throughput.
So what you're saying is it'd be awesome for my Minecraft server.
It would be very awesome for your Minecraft server.
Sweet. And it's only like, how much does that puppy cost to run a minute?
I don't know. I have one blog post out there. I was telling AC about it once too, where I actually shut down all my premium storage VMs, but I still had the disks created the host, and you get charged for those. I actually ran out of my credit in like 2 weeks without turning on any VMs. I was just leaving the premium disks sit.
This is great. So I love it.
Azure instance.
I found your blog post about it where you're going for the different prices between a D3, a G2, and a G5, and you list the G5 as arm and a leg per hour, $9.65 per hour.
And that's just the server. That doesn't include the premium storage cost.
Hmm. Man, I'm going to get Azure to look after my kids. That's cheaper than a babysitter.
Nice.
It's almost the cost of a babysitter anyway.
So yeah, you can achieve with some of those higher end GS machines, you can get a higher disk performance out of those than you can out of something like running on my MacBook Pro.
All right. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
And you're still going to get some benefit out of the Azure machines, even if the numbers don't show as high as your MacBook Pro, you can still get that benefit of you have nothing else running on the machine. These tests. I wasn't doing anything else on my machine. Again, it was only a single VM. If you want to stand up three or four of them, the split out SQL, SharePoint, AD, all of those, you're not going to need a GS5.
So the question is, what's the ROI on just buying like 10 MacBook Pros and turning those into your SharePoint farm versus building one in Azure, and how long it would take before they were the same price? Because at 3 Gs, like $3,000 a MacBook Pro, and you got 10 of them, right? Say 10 of them, maybe 8 of them for a big farm or something like that, versus a G5 in Azure. I wonder, like, we should do that math. That'd be pretty hilarious. It's probably like 4.5 minute ROI or something.
So are you implying now that AWS is going to have their own SharePoint farm option, which is you can have a rack of MacBook Pros? Yeah. Now, so is it when you're talking about these kinds of prices between, you know, using the G5s or even having to go even a little bit lower down when you can actually have things scale at different levels because you won't need you don't need as many IOPS for certain machines as you do for others. Is it something that you see? Is this cost effective to still put a SharePoint farm, to virtualize a SharePoint farm using like the Godzilla VMs, using the G Series VMs and using the premium storage? Or is it something that you're actually looking to say that, you know, we are going to be incurring an extra cost to be able to virtualize this and let Microsoft deal with the hardware instead of us dealing with the hardware? We are paying a significant tax for that. Or do you see an overall savings from this?
I think it's going to entirely depend on the size of your SharePoint farm. Again, for somebody like me that's just standing one up to test it, or if your focus is just doing dev and test on your VMs, I don't know that it's necessarily going to be worth it to pay for those GS machines or a DS machine and putting a bunch of premium storage in it. If you're running a production SharePoint farm and you're going to have 10,000 people hitting your farm and you can get by with standing up one of those GS machines for your SQL server, you may see an ROI on that just because obviously the bigger your SharePoint farm, the more resources you're going to need, the more electricity it's going to take. A lot of people have asked me ROI in Azure versus on-prem, and people tend to think even just I can buy a server for this much or I can pay this much a month for an Azure machine. They don't think about, hey, I've got to pay for cooling to cool my data center. I've got to pay for the square footage of my data center. I've got to pay for
people running around plugging them all in.
Right. Yeah. People running around plugging them all in. So I haven't sat down and tried to do a comparison of, hey, running a GS5 at $6,500 a month, which is what they estimate if you go stand it up in Azure. I haven't done a numbers to numbers comparison to know how cost effective or kind of what the ROI on that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm a SharePoint guy. It depends.
Yeah.
It's going to depend on the size of your environment. It's going to depend on even where you are. Are you paying for employees in LA to maintain a data center? Or are you paying for employees in Jacksonville to maintain a data center? There's going to be a salary difference there. You may even get more cost effectiveness based on where you are in the country. For real estate costs,
power costs,
employees, power costs, all that stuff varies based on location.
That's true.
Nice, nice. Hey, so before we move on, and we're going to talk about some gotchas in a second, do you want to quickly go over your picks, AC?
Over my picks already? I mean, you want to do...
Yeah, like, what do we break for picks, and then we'll come back to the gotchas, and we'll finish up.
Wow, man, this is a nice little... I like the mix-up here. I was caught off guard for a second.
There you go.
You gotcha.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well played.
I feel like I was just doing like a game of kick-ass. So I've got two picks this week that'll surprise you. One is, have you... Remember the game StarCraft?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everyone knows that. There is a guy who has done an entirely HTML5 implementation of StarCraft, and the entire source is up in a GitHub repo.
What?
Lost a lot of time myself in the last half day over that. It was pretty cool.
Where do people get the time to do these things?
Doesn't matter. Someone did it. I get to enjoy
it. That's amazing. That's pretty cool.
Yep, it's pretty cool. And the other one that I had... So I know we're all Star Wars fans here. I mean, I know everyone in the world is a Star Wars fan except for my wife, so we're good there. have you seen? Okay, you know the previews that are going around, the trailers for Episode 7 that's coming out later this year. Yeah, okay, that's a yes. have you seen the new little droid that's like a ball with like a little floating head?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the fact that they actually made this as a remote control toy you control with your iPhone?
I did. I saw some news and I was like, that looks awesome.
It's called BB-8 and mine shows up today.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yes way. And the kids and the dog, well, the dog didn't really understand it, but the kids and the dog have no idea it's showing up. So I can't wait to get it, charge it. And when the kids are just sitting there doing something, I'm going to have it just come rolling into the room.
Oh, that sounds ludicrously cool. I want to try that out. I want to see that. Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Can't wait. How about you? You got picks?
Mine is a lot less interesting than that.
They always are.
You know, the burn. I see what we're doing here. Okay. So you know how no matter how much money you spend on Wi-Fi gear for home, you can never get perfect Wi-Fi.
God, I'm dealing with that right now.
You know, it's like I walked into a Fry's one day and I was like, they're like, can I help you? And I was like, I want the most expensive Wi-Fi router you've got. And I got this Linksys thing, and it's got like 1,000 different antennas, and it looks like Darth Vader, and it's really awesome. And it was pretty good, like pretty amazing, but there were still some spotty areas of the house. Anyway, so I've been buying Wi-Fi gear for the new office we're building, and I've decided that I'm going to kit my house out with some of it as well. And so I don't know if you've heard of Ubiquiti Networks, but they've got this product called Unifi, U-N-I-F-I, and it's by Ubiquiti. And it is amazing. It's like enterprise-grade Wi-Fi and networking gear that you could totally use for your house if you wanted to. At least a techie geek could. And so what it does is you plug it in. There's no configuration on the device at all, right? You just plug it into your network. You got to have a controller like running on your PC or something like that. And so you log into the dashboard and you can control like they all mesh together. They've got seamless handoff between Wi-Fi access points, all built in, like enterprise grade sort of functionality that you'd expect at a sort of high-end gear. And it's pretty cheap. And so you can get switches, routers, Wi-Fi access points. So you log into the dashboard and you see a sort of a map of all the devices on your network that are all talking together and all plugged in, and it's all sort of seamlessly managed, and it's totally awesome. So I got one of these access points, a 5 gigahertz access point, and it covers the whole house like no worries at all. I've got the Unifi AP AC Pro, there you go, which has got, you know, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz and covers AC channels, obviously. I see you'd be happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we're always pros.
Yeah. But anyway, so I don't know why these guys don't sell to the consumer market, because it's the best consumer Wi-Fi product I've seen.
They're pretty slick design, too. They're really subtle. I swear I've seen these, too, in some businesses.
Oh, without a doubt. They all do PPOE, so it's like you power these suckers over your Ethernet if you want, or you plug the little adapter in, and... it just works. It's amazing.
That's nice.
I just love the whole seamless handoff. So if you've got two of these things, you get nice handoff between access points when you go upstairs to downstairs or wherever, and you don't have to deal with any of that. It looks like it's the same SSID, and then your devices won't flip over, and it's a pain in the ass and all that. Anyway, it's all gone. Try that. Unify.
Oh, that's pretty cool. All right, we will add it to the notes.
All right, so picks. Those were a couple of goodies from AC. I don't know about mine. Don't know if it lived up to your expectations, AC. But anyway, back to the show.
Well, no, does Ben have picks?
Sorry. Oh, yes. Do you have some picks?
Do I have one of
putting on the spot?
I'll do a couple. I'll make them really quick. One of them, like AC mentioned, is playing with this Raspberry Pi, especially with the Node.js and tying it into Azure. I'm not a developer. I've never actually written Node.js other than like Hello World before I created this flashing LED with my VM. So just playing around with the Raspberry Pi, Node.js, Azure, playing with a little bit of that developer stuff, as much as it pains me to admit I enjoy it.
Oh, we got you now. We got you now. There's no going back.
And the other one is completely unrelated. I saw an email about this a while ago, and they have one product out, and there's another one coming. It's the Anki Overdrive. Have you guys heard of it or seen it?
I have not.
So it's like this electric... Did you used to play with the electric racetrack? You know, you had the little triggers.
Yes,
and
electric.
And the cars go around. You could build your own tracks and all of that.
Oh, the slot cars, yeah.
Yeah. So this is like taking slot cars to a whole nother level. You can build your own tracks. The original version, you just laid out a mat and the cars went around it and they were programmed to the track. This new one, you can buy pieces and build a track. You put the car on it, and the car actually goes around the track and learns the track. And then you can race them. I can't tell how much control you have over the cars, but you can essentially put different cars on it, race them against each other. It ties into your computer, so you like can battle other cars and fire weapons at them and all of this. It's a whole bunch of crazy stuff. So they haven't released the new version yet where you get to build your own track. But it looks like it's going to start at like $150, which I didn't think was bad at all based on everything I've read about it. So I'm trying to convince my wife I need it for Christmas.
I was going to say, I know exactly what my son's getting for Christmas.
Hey, CJ, I need you to take over the show here. I just found the site. This is unfreaking believable. This is a really good find, Ben. You win on the picks.
I'll stick a link to in the show notes for sure.
Oh my God, this is incredible. This is like, it's like slot cars, but with no slots.
Yeah.
Genius. That sounds really cool.
Wow.
Nice. I'm going to have to take a look at that for sure.
I know. Yeah. I have two girls, so it might be easier convincing my wife that I need it for Christmas rather than I need to get it for my 2.5-year-old and my 6-month-old.
I think this is definitely a work expense, though. I really do think this is.
This is a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I think so.
I think there's some cloud involved in there. There's some cloud learning, some machine learning as it learns the track. Yeah. Work expense, definitely. Cloud research.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Cool. So as we wrap up here, I know you got some gotchas out of from your testing and all that sort of stuff. Do you want to talk briefly about a few things that you found, like in the sort of the gotcha bucket for folks listening?
Yeah, definitely. So a couple of them, and again, these weren't documented when I first started this. Microsoft has documented some of them. One of them is a limit with adding over 8 disks to any VM. And this is actually a Windows limitation, it appears, not anything in Azure. But if you want to stripe a bunch of disks to get really good performance in Azure, if you do it through the GUI, it will max out at 8 channels. So if you add 16 disks, you'll still only get 8 channels. So your IOPS and your throughput will be limited at what you would get from 8 disks, even though you have 16 on there. If you want to add 16 disks, do it with PowerShell. And then you can actually specify the channels. You can get 16 channels for 16 disks and get the full benefit of the throughput.
Nice.
That makes sense. That's a good find.
So yeah, that was one little thing that I found because I was adding all these disks. And I'm like, I'm adding disks and disks and disks and my performance isn't getting any better. It appeared to peak at 8 disks. And then I found this one. Mm. Another one I've had a really big problem with is if you guys listen to the podcast, follow Azure, you know they have their old model, the ASM, and the new one, the ARM.
Yep.
When I build VMs on the old ASM or the classic mode, if you're building it through the new preview portal,
mm-hmm.
I have never been able to delete my premium disks via the GUI on VMs built in ASM. I've always had to use PowerShell to delete them.
That can get expensive.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's a great feature to rack up your bill there.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know what it is. I've been able to delete them in the new, if I spin up a new one in the ARM model, I've been able to delete those via the GUI just fine. So I don't know what's going on there. I do have some PowerShell that I wrote that you can run if you have the Azure. I can't even remember what it's called. Is it the Azure PowerShell module or?
Yeah.
If you have that installed, I actually have some PowerShell. I think I have it up on GitHub. I've started putting all my PowerShell on GitHub, that you can run it and essentially just pass it the service name and the VM name, and it'll just go spin through and delete all your premium disks.
Gotcha.
It only works for ASM. It doesn't work for ARM. I may come up with a feature so you can specify which one and delete it for both of them. Another one, kind of the last one that I can think of right now that I ran into is CPUs. The big DS, I think the DS14 and the GS5, both have 30, if I remember right, 32 CPUs, 32 cores.
Okay.
No, that one's only 16. 16 for the DS14, 32 for the GS5. By default, your Azure subscription comes with 20 CPUs. So if you'll actually won't be allowed to spin up a GS5 unless you email support or open a ticket and say, hey, I want to spin up a GS5. I need more cores in my subscription.
Yeah.
So I've had no problems with it. I've said, hey, I'm trying to run some higher end VMs. Even if you want to run two DS14s, it's still 32 cores. So you need more cores in your Azure subscription. I actually went to spin up a new VM in the ARM model, tried to do a GS15. Even though my cores are up to 70, the ARM model doesn't recognize it. It still thinks I'm limited at 20 cores.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to spin up big VMs or to use more than 20 cores, I've actually had to go back and use the ASM or the Classic.
Interesting. Interesting.
Classic model to spin up those bigger VMs or to bump up past that threshold of 20 CPUs.
Mm. Yeah, I think they do that so that you don't inadvertently completely pwn yourself and, you know, rack up like 30 Gs in Azure cost inadvertently, right? You know, with needing to call them and ask for a core increase. I vividly remember doing that right before a SharePoint conference for a system we were running, and it was being absolutely slammed, and we went to go bump up the number of front ends, and they were like, well, you're at your limit. And so we had to go get them to increase it to like 150 cores or something like that.
Mm.
It was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've had no problem. So if you're trying to spin up one of those big VMs and you see that it's unavailable, try the Classic model if you're using the new preview portal, and you may have to just open a ticket with Azure. I've done it just through the portal before. I haven't even called them. I just open a support ticket and say, hey, yeah, I need an increase up to 70 cores. Usually I hear back within 24 hours. Yep. You're all good. It's been increased. Check it out. Let us know.
Yeah, if you call them, they'll do it on the spot, I think, as well. If you're in a real pinch. I mean,
their support's pretty darn impressive. I think I had a ticket one time where I set up a ticket and I had one of the support guys actually find me on Skype or Link, I can't remember which one, ask me if I was available and could we just work through the issue right then live without even talking. I'm like, oh my God, you're right. You just elevated yourself to just short of Amazon customer support.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yep. I've been super impressed.
So you do some speaking around the place as well, right? What do you got coming up later this year?
Later this year, I'm actually going to be down in Orlando. There's the Live 360 conference.
Nice.
Down there, I think November is it 16 through 20?
Yeah.
So you're talking about Raspberry Pi programming, is that it?
I'm not actually talking about that down there. Down there, I'm going to be doing a bunch of PowerShell, doing one session on automating SharePoint tasks. I have to specify now because you have Office 365 and on-prem, automating the on-prem SharePoint tasks with PowerShell, and then another one that'll just be more of like getting started on running PowerShell against Office 365, SharePoint Online. I've had some people come up to me and say, they're both SharePoint, aren't they the same thing? There's a huge difference between what you can do easily with PowerShell on-prem and what's available to do easily with PowerShell against the cloud. So there's actually a significant gap there. So sessions to kind of cover each one of those.
Nice. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Hey, so AC, you're going to that show as well, right?
Yeah, I'm actually one of the conference co-chairs for that one. And it's a really good show. I mean, it's the week of November 16th to the 20th. So if anybody's looking forward to some good like IT pro or business user or developer content around Office 365 or SharePoint, myself, Matt McDermott, we're the co-chairs for the SharePoint side of this conference of VS Live 360 in Orlando. You're going to get some great great speakers, great content from the folks like myself, from Ben here, from Dan Usher, Paul Schaeflein, Mark Rackley, Brian Alderman, Jeff Rob Bowe, Jeffrey. We've even got some SharePoint 2016 content as well. And but I tell you, if people are, I know this is we're only going to have an extra day to do this, but if you register before or by September the 16th, you get $400 off of your registration. So you got to act quick. There's a link that I'll put in the show notes on where you can actually get that registration discount. But I mean, hey, it's a good show. I mean, it's down in Orlando. If you're in a cold part of the country, great time to come down, bring the family. The hotel is literally attached to Universal Studios, so easy to go to like the parks during the day or send the family off to do the parks, and then you meet up with them in the evening. It's good fun.
Sounds like a fun show. I wish I should I should really come down for that.
I wish you could, man. I wish you could.
Hey, nice. Well, Ben, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much for coming on the show. What? Where is the best place people can find you if they want to get in touch or read your blog?
So the best place to find me is probably my blog or Twitter. Both of them are easy if you can spell my last name.
How do you do that?
Twitter is Ben Steging. Steginck. So Twitter, my blog is bensteging.com. The last name is spelled the same way there as it is on Twitter. If you want to find my company information, if you search for IntelliJink, it's IntelliJink. If you take intelligent and you take Steging and mash them together, that's kind of what that's what you get.
Very cunning.
I actually came up with that. I got to give her props for the name.
That's good call.
So you can find me on Facebook under IntelliJink. I try to share a bunch of Azure SharePoint stuff there. The company website, same thing, IntelliJink.com. There's not as much going on there. I tend to post a lot of the news articles and stuff just under Ben Steging. If you want to find me anywhere else, LinkedIn, any of those, search for Ben Steging. As far as I know, I am the only Ben Steging.
Yeah, that's where we differ quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you probably
it's
search
like a
for
Jillian Chris Johnson's. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a friend too that was Brian Smith.
It's like Joe. It's like what's the common one they use on
John Smith or John Doe?
John Smith on the credit card ads. Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you very much indeed for coming on the show. This stuff's really interesting. It's not, you know, it's not something I don't think AC or I have done a whole lot of, testing in or things like that. So we look at this stuff and it's super interesting, and I'm glad somebody out there is doing it, especially with a SharePoint twist to it as well, because it's definitely a topic that has, it's come up in a bunch of conversations about performance of SharePoint and Azure and things. So I'm really stoked that there's somebody out there doing this testing for us and putting that info out there. So I appreciate that.
Not a problem. Thanks again for having me. Hopefully people learned something from it.
Oh, yeah. No, without a doubt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we make sure we have all the show notes here on the you can hear typing during the recording here, if anybody's paying attention closely enough. But I've been chasing down a bunch of links and everything to include here on the show. So I have a bunch of stuff there for people to take a look at.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, AC. Thanks, Ben. And we will see you next week.
Absolutely. Cheers, guys.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.